listening to The Cooler Ring, a podcast made for manufacturing marketers. Here are Carmen Perry and Jeff White.
Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, and you?
I'm doing great.
Nice. This is like our first like post-rapture recording.
Yeah. The eclipse kind of took all the fun away yesterday.
It's just kind of funny, like here in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which is we always try to incorporate into a few podcast episodes on occasion, a bit of a tourism message for Nova Scotia and for Halifax. But we weren't in the area of totality, so it was a bit. It was lackluster. It was anticlimactic, one might say.
I think you said you were walking home from work yesterday and a bunch of kids were saying that that was it?
Yeah, they were like standing around because I live around a university, and so a bunch of the kids were out and about in the street, like all kind of shocked that that was it. So look, we didn't do anything earth-shattering yesterday, but today.
We are.
Today's better. Because manufacturers, look, it's as cliche as ever to talk about marketing and sales alignment. Everybody wants, the team should be aligned and on the same page. But okay, well, what does that mean? Do you have a playbook for doing it? Have you done it in the past? Have you worked in this space? Other than saying that, peanut butter and jelly should get together and make a sandwich. Is there more to it than that? And that's why I'm excited for today's guest, because it's really about like a playbook for how you think about sales and marketing alignment, the things that you need to get right and why it's important for manufacturers. And I think that's a really cool topic.
It is. It's a topic as old as time. I recall that one of our best performing blog posts on HubSpot.com in like 2013 was about sales and marketing alignment. So we've been talking about it for a long time, but this guest has actually done it.
Yeah, so, exactly. So let's get out of it. Let's get to it. I'm excited.
Absolutely. So joining us today is Jennifer Sunshine. Jennifer is the founder of Sunshine Digital. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Jennifer.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Jennifer, it's awesome to have you on the show. And tell our listeners a bit about you, because you've founded Sunshine Digital, but you've also worked client-side on the manufacturing space for a long time as well. So I guess perhaps introduce our listeners to you a bit more formally.
Sure. So I've been doing digital consulting and marketing consulting for the past 5 years, working with SaaS startups and industrials and large financial firms, helping them drive revenue and growth for their businesses. Prior to that, I led digital marketing for AIG's commercial division. So think commercial insurance, which includes industrial commercial insurance. And prior to that, I led demand generation for the GE Power business. So, we all know where GE Power sits in very industrial space.
Fantastic. Tell us a bit about your approach to sales and marketing alignment and kind of how you help your customers and your clients drive that.
Yeah, and I guess, first things first, you really get, everybody talks about it, but I'm assuming, as you look at it, what are the kind of the problems and challenges that you see in terms of how even people start to think about it?
I think there's a lot of challenges that I see in the space. And I think one of the biggest challenges is misalignment on metrics and goals. So sales talks about pipeline a lot, forecasting, sales velocity, and marketing talks about MQLs, awareness, and brand. And sometimes there's a misunderstanding or a misalignment. Really a misalignment between the two teams on what they're driving. So marketing will say, I want to drive more MQLs. This is a common thing. And I'm helping sales pipeline. Sales doesn't consider an MQL pipeline. They don't consider it pipeline until it's past a certain stage. So often that stage is banned. You have to get through budget, authority, need, and timing before they'll even consider it real in pipeline. So that's a big misconception.
So as you think about this misalignment on metrics, is it really about saying, okay, well, you know, trying to get the respective organizations to understand and respect the metrics of the other? Or is it about realigning around a different set of metrics that we can all agree on?
It's about aligning to a different set of metrics. So we all need to agree to one set of metrics that provide success, right? So what you'll often see is marketers will get MQLs, but they're not converting to actual pipelines. So they're not converting to stuff that sales considers good or considers in their forecast. And then the other thing that happens is they're not considering the sales velocity, which is a big deal for sales. So how quickly they can sell it. And so if you're misaligned on that, you're never going to agree on what's a good lead and what's a bad lead. And you're never going to actually get what the goal is, which is to grow the business, right? That's always the goal of the business. It's to grow the business profitably. So you first have to align that there, what's the business goal? And then you need to align on what you're trying to achieve.
Do you think that, because so often, you know, sales, we hear sales doesn't want to hear anything until somebody's actually at an opportunity stage, you know, but do you think that that's an educational issue, or are they actually right that they shouldn't be engaged until something has gotten well past the just downloaded a white paper phase?
So the question becomes, what is your lead stages and when does sales get involved? And that needs to be co-defined between marketing, sales, and if you have some kind of qualification team, and you need to define all those things, right? And the stages in between. And there needs to be SLAs set up. So often I find that that has not been set up with a lot of my clients in a very systematic fashion. And everything needs to be defined and well-structured, or there could be a lot of back and forth. So for your example, with a white paper, sales often doesn't want to see a white paper download except in certain situations. So you need to define that with them. And I don't think it's an educational thing, because often the white papers, or sometimes the white papers, don't turn into pipeline immediately. They do need more nurturing.
I've got like 400 different questions I want to ask here, Jeff. I'm like going all over the place. I guess I'll start with your comment around sales velocity and endeavoring to reach a level of common ground there. Have you worked with... So it's one thing, you know, I guess part of that can be about the lead that's coming into the pipeline, the opportunity that's being created. If it's at a certain stage, it's BANT qualified, things of that sort, it's probably moving at a certain velocity, and that's a velocity that the sales organization is used to and enjoys. Potentially, I don't know. But So part of that is, okay, marketing, please provide me with somebody that's at the right stage so that it meets our velocity, our desired sales velocity targets. The other side of it, of course, is, you know, sales is working a lot of opportunities, and marketing can find some ways to help those things along or actually help move things down the funnel. How have you found that the balance there? Because in some ways, the picture that you're painting about the level of cooperativeness, at least at the outset, between marketing and sales isn't overly rosy. So how are you, I guess, talk to me about that. Have you seen sales teams willing to let marketing accelerate their sales velocity before marketing has proven that they can throw some good leads into the pipe? See my point?
Yes. I think there's, I want to back up just one second. All leads are not created equally, and sales velocity can be actually optimized. So when you start to get more advanced in your marketing activities, you should be considering the sales velocity, because there's a time value of the money that, like, if it's a long sales cycle, the shorter the sales cycle, the more money the company makes and the more value. So you should be looking at how and what is converting to quicker closed deals, and the value of those closed deals. And you want to be balancing all of those things with your sales team to optimize what marketing your campaigns you're doing, what marketing activities you're doing, to figure that out, right? The last part of it is what you were saying with helping improve the sales velocity. I think if you're aligned with sales and you start having active communications with them and you start to get on their forecasting calls, their quarterly forecasting calls, you can understand where their pipeline is, what's going on in their pipeline, and you can have individual conversations with sales leadership to try to help them through those challenges that they have, which might be their sales velocity isn't great in a certain region or a certain place for a certain target demographic. But if you're not aligned with them, if you're not having those conversations, if you're not sitting and discussing these kinds of items with them, you're never going to get into the room to help them improve.
Getting into the room with sales and ensuring that marketers understand the challenges, the pace that they are looking for and what they need, you know, that's going to also help a marketer to understand, you know, what do we have to create? You know, what needs to be put together in order to actually increase this velocity? What kinds of things have you seen and what approaches have you taken with your clients around helping them get more aligned with sales in terms of content creation and campaign metrics and things like that?
I think there's two things. One is I start with trying to encourage my clients to sit down with sales at the beginning of the year and focus what they're trying to achieve and what products they're trying to sell. If it's globally, what regions of the world are they trying to sell it to? And have an honest conversation after that on what budget marketing has and where they're going to focus, right? So that sales and marketing are aligned at the very beginning on the strategy. You want to be starting with the personas, which sales can locally help you define. Once you've defined those target audience, that target customer, and the details of that persona with your local sales teams, which will be nuanced, you can better map the customer journey together based on the information they've given you. So for example, they can tell you how knowledgeable the customer is about your product. They can tell you some information about where these target audiences might be in their buying journey. Have they bought before? They can help you refine who you're targeting. They can help you understand technology differences. They can help you understand demographics that you might not know out of your database. And that can all inform what you're going to create in the future. And if you have that level of alignment, there's not as much tension.
It's a really cool idea, this idea of co-creating the customer journey maps with the sales organization. Certainly not uncommon to do a lot of qualitative research and interviews, et cetera, with a sales organization in the creation of those assets. I don't know that that reaches to the level of co-creation that you're speaking of, though. I feel like you're talking at it a bit, even a more elevated level again. I'm seeing that as a really interesting artifact, if you will, or tool, this co-created customer journey map with sales, as a way of driving alignment. You also mentioned the service level agreement, the SLA between marketing and sales, as kind of a tool for driving alignment, if you will. I'd like to reflect on that. How have you seen that work? And I would be curious in distinctions between larger organizations and smaller organizations, because I think at a certain size, some people tend to think of SLAs between marketing and sales as being something for the big boys, not for us, kind of thing. So please talk to us about that.
So SLAs are important no matter what size organization you're in. Even my startup SaaS companies, I have them define SLAs. And there's a reason for it. If it gets full alignment on what everybody's doing and when everybody's doing it, and how long things can sit. It also means that marketing has better metrics, but also sales has better metrics. So if you think about a typical SLA, in a typical startup, and even in big companies, I see this as well, someone will fill out a form and say, contact me, which is the highest, most high intent you can get, right? Someone has now requested sales contact them. What I often see is that no one will contact them in 24, 48 hours, 72 hours. And every minute that doesn't get contacted, your conversion rate goes down, right? So having a proper SLA, if sales is going to follow up with that or whoever is going to follow up with that lead, is really vital. And if you explain the importance of it to all parties, people start to understand why that's so vital and they start to actually follow up quicker.
Yeah, I mean, it's really SLAs are then a way of driving you know, compliance in some ways. I mean, you can tell the sales organizations all you want that, guys, we need to follow up with these leads within 24 hours. But you're saying that having the SLA in place and measuring to it basically gives you a stronger stick to manage it with.
The other thing that's really important with SLAs is to get leadership buy-in, because if you have leadership buy-in, then the SLA is more effective. So one of my roles, I had sales leadership really bought in. And when the SLA wasn't followed up with, an automatic email went out saying, you haven't followed your SLA. And this was a sales leader. And all of a sudden, SLAs started getting followed up with, right? So SLAs were followed, right? So it's important to get not only buy-in from the sales team, but sales leadership, because they can help drive some of those SLAs to occur. And when you have definitions of what sales wants, you have less argument on the SLAs. So back to your white paper example, right? If sales doesn't want a white paper, you can talk to leadership all you want. You're going to have constant pushback. If sales says they want this person, the people who are contacting you through the website, for example, you're going to have no pushback. They want it. So it's not just SLAs, but it's also definition of what they want and when and who's going to handle what. That's really vital, because then sales is incentivized to sell, right? So the SLAs will be less contentious.
Have you found that putting those kinds of metrics into an SLA and standards around reaching back out have helped convince sales teams that this is a good thing, you know, like the performance and the velocity of deal flow is actively made better through the following of this, and therefore you get more compliance just because it's a bit of a hamster wheel at that point?
Yes, yes. And also the definition of what they want and what they don't want, or what they're seeing is working and what they aren't seeing is working, is really vital as well. So it's also an optimization on the marketing part, and then the SLAs in conjunction. So if you're seeing that certain types of leads that were received certain ways aren't converting, don't start forcing SLAs, change your marketing plan, because something's going wrong. And if you're having communications in a feedback loop with sales, then you'll know what's going wrong. You can fix it, optimize, and then SLAs will be followed. So it's like a constant back and forth. It's like a dance with sales.
I think that, I don't want to put words in your mouth too much, but I mean, you're really stressing the importance there of communication between the two groups. And it's interesting that we're still kind of considering them two groups. I mean, we talk about sales and marketing alignment. It is fundamentally even a term that suggests that there are two groups that need to be aligned and brought in some ways closer together, but they are different. And then, in more modern approaches to RevOps, et cetera, where we're starting to see these organizations brought under one umbrella, moving beyond maybe alignment to, I would say maybe synchronization versus alignment would be maybe the next level past alignment. Is it communication that really drives that? Is that the key?
Yes, that's the key. Over-communicating is the key. More meeting, like I hate to say it, but sometimes more meetings than less is better. When I've run teams when we're running campaigns locally, we will be on the phone with sales once a week for 15 minutes, just catching up. How is it going? How do you feel? How are things looking? Does this feel right to you? Are we hitting the mark? Because not everything gets into, you know, your CRM. So getting that pulse also makes everybody feel more confident in the situation. Another thing that I like to do is if sales is selling, right, when we give presentations to senior leadership, something else I've done in my past is bring sales to the meeting. So that's not just marketing speaking about the success or whatever we've gotten closed or whatever we've done to build pipeline, but it's sales sitting there with us talking about how we cohesively did it together. It's their story as well. So bringing the pieces together and making sure you're communicating with the teams constantly is really vital. You're one team, you're not separate teams, and you've got to sound the same.
I want to key on something that you just mentioned, because you talked a bit about the, you know, it may not even be shown in the CRM. And I continue to be amazed with the level of organization that still isn't necessarily on board or actively using marketing technology like a CRM. How much of what you're doing in terms of bringing these teams together is reliant on the implementation of modern marketing technology?
It's very important. And I think CRM is really vital for marketing and sales. But I think that sometimes when sales is busy, they sometimes don't, like if they're very busy with big deals, especially in like enterprise sales, sometimes, especially at the end of the quarter, things are lost in the CRM. And that's okay. You missed your SLA, you didn't update Salesforce or HubSpot. It's okay. And as long as the deal's flowing, right? Like in the end of the day, we only care that the deal closes. If Salesforce or HubSpot are updated a day or two later, you know, so understanding, getting that pulse is really vital. But yeah, you can't do sales or marketing without, you can't scale beyond a very small company without some kind of CRM. And I would say that's bigger than marketing, right? Like you need Salesforce or HubSpot or something like that for even a startup or a small company when you have more than a couple deals in the pipeline.
Having seen companies in excess of $750 million in annual revenue operating off of a spreadsheet for the CRM, I've got to tell you that it can be done, but it's scary to see.
I think the problem with when the CRM is not actually implemented in a piece of technology is you have no continuity if someone gets sick. Or someone, and in today's day and age, that could happen if there's an earthquake or if something happens, there's no continuity for someone to pick up where the sale is left.
Oh, yeah. No, we're in violent agreement on this. there's no question, Jennifer, that it ought to be in place. It just always shocks me when it's not.
On that point, like if Salesforce or HubSpot and there isn't a CRM, marketing is really flying blind. So marketing should be encouraging the sales team and maybe helping set up the CRM so that they can get, marketing can help drive the pipeline. Without CRM, I don't think you can do much because you have no line of sight.
We're getting way past like when you actually said this comment, but it's just, to me, it's a neat little nugget and something that I think people could implement almost tomorrow and drive an interesting additional level of sales and marketing alignment. And that's the notion of bringing sales into the room during those more marketing-based presentations. It's interesting for me to imagine the impact of that. I can imagine a marketing team that's presenting a new campaign, maybe to leadership or something of that sort. And if you're going to be presenting that with sales in the room, that means you're going to actually incorporate sales into the thinking of that campaign beforehand, because you're certainly not going to ask them to come into the room and just rubber stamp it, because you would never be sure that they're going to do that, right? So just even that one thought that every time marketing is making a presentation, every time that marketing is actually talking about our impact, we're always going to do that with a salesperson in the room. So that they can validate and add texture to what they're seeing on the ground. That sounds to me like a really interesting recipe for progress.
It is. It's a lot. It helps a lot. And it also means that when you start to show successes, right, when you drive bottom line or improve sales velocity, you're not telling the story as much. Sales starts telling the story more. And so it becomes more impactful for the whole business. It's a really important portion of marketing and sales alignment, because otherwise there can be contention because sales feels like you're taking credit for their sale. And you don't want credit. We don't need credit for the sale. So it brings everyone together.
Yeah, and I think the credibility that it adds too. I just remember speaking of one of our kind of shared part of our background. You mentioned GE Power. I used to work in the utility space as well. Not for a company of the size of GE, however, but nevertheless, one of the head of the utility always used to say, like, what does it have to do with keeping the lights on anyway? Like any time something was being talked about, that was the bar. You know, what does it have to do with keeping the lights on? Which, frankly, it can be hard for marketing sometimes to find the connection between what they're doing and what it is and keeping the lights on, particularly in a highly regulated utility. Kind of that's the where I see sales, like, that's the same thing. It's like, what does it have to do with the bottom line anyway? What does it have to do with and with sales in the room, connecting those dots becomes a lot easier, I think, for people who may otherwise be skeptical.
Exactly. So when back to improving the sales velocity conversation, if you're doing improving the sales velocity, but it's not as measurable, maybe you did it on a couple deals that you helped with improving the sales velocity. If sales is in the room saying your campaign helped, no one's going to argue with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's brilliant.
One thing to note, it doesn't start with just bringing them in. Like, you really need to be bringing them along the whole journey. It's one thing I do want to know.
Yeah, and of course, you wouldn't have the courage to bring them in if you didn't bring them along on that journey. That's what I like about it. There's a certain kind of, we're kind of setting our listeners up, right? If you go and make the decision to bring them into the room, then I can automatically imagine what the other decisions you're going to make along the way. I think it's a really cool piece of advice, Jennifer.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and experience with our listeners. I feel like we could occupy another hour of your time, but I thank you for sharing it with us today.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks for listening to The Cooler Ring with Carmen Perry and Jeff White. Don't miss a single manufacturing marketing insight. Subscribe now at kulapartners.com/thecoolerring. That's KULA partners.com/thecoolerring.